I'll read you my assignment and then try to fulfill it. Quote, the object is to set the book of Judges into historical context of the rest of Scripture. Go through a brief summation of each judge. What enemies were the children of Israel facing during this time? And what do we know about these other kingdoms during this time? Also deal with a 5,000 feet view. What is the point of much of the judges? What sort of people do we find in Israel during this period in their history? Any other information you find important and relevant to a discussion of this book? Good assignment. Good to be with you. First thing we need to do is to set the book of Judges into a historical context, as the assignment has suggested, in terms of the rest of Scripture. And immediately we face a much disputed chronological issue. Through the years, there have been various attempts to determine the total length of the era of the Judges. And we could very easily spend this entire session just dealing with the chronology of the book of Judges, its total length, and the way that time is to be divided between the various phases of oppression and peace that are set forth in the book. It's my job to keep that from happening. In other words, to keep us from spending our entire time on the chronology, even though those chronological issues are interesting to me. We can't spend much time on it because we do have so much else to look at. A couple of years ago, in a similar men's study, I spent a lot of time talking about the chronological issues involved in determining the date of the beginning of the 70 weeks in the ninth chapter of the book of Daniel. Some of you were there, and I did not apologize for spending a lot of time on that, because in that case, the chronology was the essence of the issue. But here in Judges, the chronology is not the essence of the issue, and therefore, in a class like this, at least, it should have proportionately less time. But we do need to start with it. And I'd like to begin in 1 Kings chapter 6, verse 1, where I think we have a rather clear and definitive statement. 1 Kings 6, 1. It came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel were come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziph, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. Now notice that expression there, 480th year after the Exodus. If we could chart this on the board, we could make this be the Exodus over here. And over here, we have Solomon's fourth year. And if I understand 1 Kings 6:1 correctly, between these two points, we have 480 years. Is that the way you read it? Make sense? Okay, now we need to think in terms of what chunks we need to leave out of this 480 years to arrive at the approximate time that the book of Judges, that the events of the book of Judges concern. What do we need to leave out on this end? What happens after the Exodus? Okay, we've got how long for that? All right, 40 years here. And we'll just call that the time of Moses. Anything else we need to leave out over here? This end? Okay, time of Joshua. I'm not certain that I can determine precisely how long that was, but I'm just going to put down numbers, say about 26 years. So we get to the beginning of the time of the judges here, Joshua and the elders, as the Bible refers to them. Now, what about on this end? What do we need to leave out over here? Okay, how long is Solomon? All right, this is the fourth year, so Solomon's time there. What else do we need to leave out over here? Okay, David's 40. And Saul's 40. David's 40. And when Saul is appointed by Samuel, that could be, we could make a case that that would be the end of the time of the judge. So if we subtract these pieces that we've talked about here, we come up with a period of approximately 340 years. 340 years. Now, there's a statement in the book of Acts, chapter 13, from the lips of the Apostle Paul, that has often been perplexing to people, and I don't know if it's perplexing to you or not, but I'll read it from the King James Version because I think it at least deserves notice as we pass by. Acts chapter 13, verses 17 through 20. The God of this people Israel chose our fathers and exalted the people when they dwelt as strangers in the land of Egypt, and with a high arm brought them out of it. And about the time of 40 years suffered he their manners in the wilderness, and when he had destroyed seven nations in the land of Canaan, he divided their land to them by lot. And after that he gave them judges about the space of 450 years until Samuel the prophet. When I was a boy and all through the years, this has been used by many people to make the case that the period of the judges was about 450 years. And I have shown you a significantly shorter period of time than that on the board. But I think we have a translation issue here. Many of you may have the New King James Version with you. Somebody want to read the appropriate portion there from the New King James Version? Okay. Let me read it to you from the ESV, and I'll start back in verse 17 for context. The God of this people, Israel, chose our fathers and made the people great during their stay in the land of Egypt, and with uplifted arm he led them out of it. For about 40 years he put up with them in the wilderness, and after destroying seven nations in the land of Canaan, he gave them their land as an inheritance. All this took about 450 years. After that, he gave them judges until Samuel the prophet. Now, if this translation is correct, then Paul was thinking of the approximately 450 years from Abraham's time up to the time of the judges, rather than saying that the judges lasted for 450 years. Let me read it to you just to kind of nail this point down a bit from the New American Standard Bible. The New American Standard Bible is a literal equivalency translation regarded as a pretty good translation in our time. I'll read it again from the New American Standard. The God of this people, Israel, chose our fathers and made the people great during their stay in the land of Egypt, and with an uplifted arm he led them out of it. And for a period of about 40 years he put up with them in the wilderness, and when he had destroyed seven nations in the land of Canaan, he distributed their land as inheritance, all of which took about 450 years. And after these things he gave them judges until Samuel the prophet. So when you're making your own personal decisions about the chronology of the book of Judges, all of this should be taken into account, and I'll throw this in the mix as well. Very interesting that when we do take the numbers that are mentioned in the book of Judges and add them all together, plus Eli's 40 years from 1 Samuel, we do come up with 450 years, the periods of oppression and the times that are given for the judging of the judges. We come up with 450 years there. But I must mention this also. The ancient people did not think of time and the measuring of time in exactly the same way that you and I do. They tended to reckon inclusively. This is why in the 10th chapter of the book of Acts, they can take a 72-hour period of time and yet call it 4 days. Cornelius is a Roman. He's talking to the Jews, and he calls it 4 days. And everybody understands what he's talking about, even though you and I would call 72 hours 3 days. Cornelius calls it 4 days and is completely understood because they reckoned inclusively. Any piece of a day was counted as a day. Any piece of a year was counted as a year. So that may be a part of what is going on here. I'm not sure about that. But it may be that even though there were times where people were judging on the east side of the Jordan and the west side of the Jordan at the same time concurrently, it may be that these years are added together as though they had happened subsequently. Consecutively, and the total number there being 450 years. That's worth noting and considering. You must each make of it what you will in your own personal studies. Rather than all of the years mentioned in the book of Judges being added linearly together for the 450, I believe that the book of Judges itself suggests some overlapping. Let me give you just one example of that in Judges chapter 10, verse 7. Judges chapter 10, verse 7. The anger of the Lord was hot against Israel, and he sold them into the hands of the Philistines and into the hands of the children of Ammon. Now, These are two of the main oppressing enemies in the book of Judges. We'll be talking about them more separately and later. But the idea here is that these two oppressions were operative at the same time. At least that's sure the way it's made to sound there. So there are hints like that in the book of Judges that make us think that there is some suggestion of overlapping there. And here it seems that the Ammonite and Philistine oppressions began about the same time. It would seem that judgeships that were carried on in widely separated parts of the land of Israel would more likely be contemporaneous than those that were in the same area or close areas. There's an interesting thing, a contrast between the first four judgeships and the rest of the book. The phrase, "the land had rest," seems to apply to the entire land, but that phrase appears only four times in the book of Judges, and it involves the first four judgeships, Othniel, Ehud, Deborah, and Gideon. And I can give you the references for those if you want them, but I guess I won't unless you specifically ask about that. The later judgeships have a corresponding expression, "and he judged Israel," they say, over a period of so many years. I could give you those references too. This change of expression from "the land had rest" to "and he judged Israel" seems to suggest, at least to me, that the word "rest" carries a significant connotation, that is, rest for the complete land. If this is true, then none of the first four oppressions could have been contemporaneous. The first four cycles of oppression and judgeship surely were successive, one thing following another. These were the Mesopotamian oppression for 8 years put down by Othniel, followed by a rest of 40 years, the Midianite oppression for 18 years put down by Ehud, followed by a rest of 80 years, the Canaanite oppression for 20 years, put down by Deborah and Barak, followed by a rest of 40 years, and the Midianite oppression of 7 years, put down by Gideon and followed by a rest of 40 years. I think these happen successively, and it adds up to quite a period of time. But later, there's a possibility for overlapping. Tola and Jair could have judged at the same time, because Jair judged in Mount Ephraim west of the Jordan, Jair over in Gilead, which was east of the Jordan. It's true that Jair is said to have arisen after Tola, but that may only mean that he began after Tola began, and not that he began after Tola had finished. Since Tola judged for 23 years and Jair for 22, the total for both of them need not have been more than 23, although it may have been, I don't know. Other minor judges like Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon are listed as serving 7, 10, and 8 years respectively. But these need not have been successive judgeships either, although they're short enough that they could have been successive to one another. It wouldn't affect the rest of the timeline. But like Tola and Jair, they served in different areas. They probably served contemporaneously with Jephthah and or Samson. Now, I mentioned that the last oppression, that of the Philistines, began about the same time as the Ammonite oppression. We saw that in chapter 10, verse 7. Samson judged for 20 years. This 20 years seems to be best placed between the Battle of Aphek, as recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 4, and the Battle of Mizpah, as recorded in 1 Samuel chapter 7. These battles were just 20 years apart, and for reasons we're going to look at later, it seems that Samson's judgeship of 20 years fits within those two. This gives a three-year overlap between the judgeships of Jephthah and Samson, with Jephthah over on the other side of Jordan and Transjordan, and Samson in southwestern Palestine, probably including Hebron. The Ammonite oppression existed approximately during the first half of the Philistine oppression. The Philistine oppression was much longer, about twice as long as the Ammonite oppression. Samuel began his judgeship following the Battle of Aphek, like Samson, and was contemporaneous with Samson for the duration of Samson's life, if I'm understanding it correctly. Samuel lived a lot longer than Samson did, continuing on into the monarchy and anointing both Saul and David to office as the first two kings. But I'm thinking that when the anointing of Saul occurred, then we can close out the era of the judges because we're in the kings by then. Now, maybe I better pass you out a timeline. I can see this is going to be confusing no matter how we do it, but the timeline might help a bit. Maybe we pass something out. We have to talk about it now. Just keep reading. Here's a little outline of the book of Judges on the first sheet. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later, maybe. But the chronological chart obviously begins at the bottom of that first sheet. And it's just sort of introductory to what we're really talking about. The business end of things is on the second sheet. And if you were to cut these apart, then the bottom one would fit on the right side to complete the timeline. And you can see on here that according to the thinking of the man who made this chart, at least, there is some concurrence between various judgeships, some of them occurring at the same time as we've been talking about. So I hope that this timeline will help out a little bit. As far as the years that are used here, I have told you before in other settings that it's impossible for us to make an absolute chronology of the Old Testament because we just don't have quite enough information. You can make a standard chronology and try to make it consistent with itself. But anytime you're trying to make a chronology, you come up against issues where you have to make a decision. You either have to make a decision and go left or right, or you have to stop trying to make a chronology. So if you're going to make a chronology, you've got to make some assumptions about where's the best place the evidence is taking you, and then put that number down on your timeline. And that's why you look at different chronologies, you find that they differ rather widely sometimes. So we just do the best we can with that. This is one man's thought on what the year periods would have been to make it fit in with the rest of the Old Testament. I think he had based this probably on Thiel's chronology, and we've talked about Thiel before. That is one point of view about an Old Testament chronology. There are others. So we should just be aware of that. Sometime you might want to try making your own Old Testament chronology and see how you come out. Get all the help you want, but just see how you come out. You will at least find out where the questions are and why they are the questions when you try to make your own Old Testament chronology. Anyway, I hope that these charts will help rather than hinder our thinking together about the book of Judges. We're talking about contemporaneity with one another. When you have them in different places, Ibzan, for instance, was in Bethlehem way down in the south, Elon was in Zebulun up in the north, and Abdon was in Ephraim between the two. No reason why they couldn't have all judged at the same time in a regional way. Abdon probably served in Ephraim after Samuel had moved from Shiloh, which was in Ephraim, to his home in Ramah of Benjamin. Abdon was probably there. Anyway, I don't know as much about this as I would like to. I don't know where to find the information, but this chart is one possible picture of how this works, and that's all that it is. I do think the chart pretty well fits with all the information that we do have scripturally, but you probably could make a chart that looked different that would also fit the scriptural information. So don't get hung up positively or negatively on what I've given to you. If it's meaningless to you, just dismiss it. And if it is helpful to you, don't take it as gospel, because there are other ways of understanding the information that we do have. Now, the word judge is from a Hebrew term, shafat. And it usually means to make a decision between two or more possibilities. That's the way we use it today. I do got to make a judgment. Decision between two or more possibilities. But there are 30 instances in the Old Testament where it means more than that. It still has that meaning. But its unique meaning with regard to the judges adds in the idea of service as a leader. The judges had to make decisions. They had to make judgments. But they also served as leaders. And this involves more than just civil leadership. In at least the case of six or seven of the judges, they had military authority and they were deliverers of the people. Othniel, Ehud, Deborah, Gideon, Jephthah, Samson, and possibly Shamgar were in that category of military deliverers of the people. After Samuel, the leaders are no longer called judges. The word involved when we're talking about judge. After the time of Samuel, then the word is Melech, afterward to the king. Japheth was ceasing and Melech was beginning by kings who would Malak, M-A-L-A-K, to rule as king. So there was that change that was made under the judges. It really could have been a wonderful time. There was no taxation for civil government, almost no taxation, or probably almost none, if any, because there was almost no government to support. But under the kings, there would be tremendous taxation. God wanted the people to realize the contrasting benefit that had been available in the form of government that he had prescribed for them in the first place. Now, in the book of Judges itself, we find 12 judges, at least the way I count them. And I like to think of them as 6 major and 6 minor. You don't have to use that if you don't want to, but I think it's reasonable because some of the judges were hardly mentioned at all. 6 major and 6 minor. We have a couple more judges in the beginning part of 1 Samuel for a total of 14 judges, 8 major and 6 minor. The major ones, as I deem them, are Othniel, Ehud, Deborah, Gideon, Jephthah, Samson, Eli, and Samuel, with the minor being Shamgar, Tola, Jer, Ibzan, Elon, and Abdon. This distinction is based on whether or not the judge effected a military victory and whether the judge's record is extensive in the text as we have it. The most extensive record of a minor judge, as I've listed them, is just 3 verses. Jer, Ibzan, and Abdon all get 3 verses each. Tola and Elon get 2 verses each, and Shamgar just gets 1 verse. That's 3 for Elon. On the other hand, major judges run up to a maximum of 100 verses. Gideon has 100 verses. Samson has 96 verses. Othniel only has 4 verses, but he was a military leader. Ehud and Deborah fall in between these two extremes so far as textual coverage is concerned. Samuel was easily the most important of all the judges, and Eli carries quite a significance that's not always understood, in my opinion. And if we get to Eli, we'll talk about that. I don't know if we'll get to Eli or not. He's not totally within the purview of this assignment because he's not the book of Judges, but I do hope to cover him if we have time. When do I stop? 1:15? Okay. So we'll give that a try anyhow. But I don't want to go too fast because I found that to be counterproductive. We should note that not all 14 of the judges have this verb Japheth used with regard to them. It's only fair to point that out. 3 of the earlier ones do not. Ehud, Gideon, and Shamgar do not have this word used to describe them. But I believe that each one of them qualifies as a judge on other grounds. In Ehud, chapter 3, verse 15, in Gideon, chapter 6, verses 12 through 16, it's obvious that both of them were raised up by God for their work, and each of them effected a significant deliverance from an oppressing enemy. Ehud drove out the Midianites, and Gideon... Ehud drove out the Moabites and Gideon the Midianites. After each of these deliverances, there was an extended period of peace that ensued, 80 years after Ehud and 40 years after Gideon. This was a period of peace when a continuing judgeship could have existed. In fact, in Gideon's case, in chapter 8, verse 28, we're told that the country was in quietness for 40 years in the days of Gideon, implying, I think, his continuing leadership. But these were relatively early judges when the concept of a continued civil leadership wasn't really developed or may not have been as developed as it was later. So I call Ehud and Gideon judges because they were parallel in function to the other judges. That's the same reason I call Titus an evangelist. Titus was parallel in function to Timothy, who is told to do the work of an evangelist. And so I reason, if Titus was not an evangelist, you know, he's told, for this cause I left thee in Crete to set in order the things that are wanting and ordain elders in every city. If Titus was not an evangelist, then what was it? And I would say the same thing about Ehud and Gideon. If they weren't judges, what were they? Because they were parallel in function to the other judges. Shamgar we call a judge because he is mentioned as he is in the book of Judges. There's no rationale for him to be mentioned as he is in 331 unless he is shown to be one. He killed 600 Philistines and he, quote, delivered Israel, end quote. So if he wasn't a judge in the sense that that word is used in the book of Judges, then what was Shamgar? Now the verb Japheth is used of Othniel, the first judge, and Deborah, the fourth. but not in the sense of a continuing leadership after the time of deliverance. Of Othniel it said that he judged Israel and went out to war. That's 3:10. That relates his activity as a judge to his military leadership. Of Deborah, it is said that she judged Israel, chapter 4, verse 4, prior to the time of the military encounter with the Canaanites. Not a word, the word is not used of her following the deliverance. The word was used in a sense of continuing civil leadership only after the time of Gideon. That doesn't mean that the earlier judges didn't serve as leaders following their military victories, but they may not have served in quite the same sense or with the same degree of recognition by the people as the later judges were, because we have a gradual thing happening. The people are getting closer and closer to a monarchy as we go through the book of Judges. There's more and more need for that because of the failures of the people. The idea of a continued judgeship after a deliverance, with the term judging used for this, I think came about gradually as the judges came increasingly to fill this role. Remember, judges are not prescribed in the law, in the sense of these people in the book of Judges. The idea of the judges and the manner of their activity was something that seems to have developed probably quite gradually and became known in a gradual way. I should mention as we begin here that we have four men not included in our list of judges: Barak, Abimelech, Joel, and Abiah. Now, Barak sometimes is in people's lists of judges. If you want to put it there, you know, that's fine with me. It's up to you. But I would point out to you that Shaphat is not used of him, and it is used of Deborah, and they are involved in the same story at the same time. He's a prophetess, and she is a judge. Now, in the later history of the judges, as I pointed out, we have more than one judge at a time called by God to serve. But this was not true in the early history of the judges, and Barak and Deborah were very early. Barak was only a helper to Deborah, and not a leader in his own right, and Deborah had to cajole him. She had to work at persuading him to help her. I like to see some gallantry in a man. Barak said, "Hey, if you don't go with me, I'm not going to go." And I just don't consider him a judge. Abimelech did not serve as a judge. He was Gideon's son, of course, and maybe thought that there should be some hereditary fallout because his father was a judge. Abimelech contrived to have himself proclaimed king, but he is not said to have been approved by God. He is not implied to have been approved by God, and he did not serve the people in any way that was beneficial for them. Joel and Abiah, the sons of Samuel, did not serve well, and neither one of them played any role of importance, especially in a positive way. So I don't consider any of those four, Barak, Abimelech, Joel, or Abiah, judges. Information about, yeah, Tom? Well, he doesn't call him a judge. Now, he does put him in Hebrews chapter 11, I think it's the 32nd verse there. And he is to be commended for his victory. But he had to be controlled to go out and do it. He doesn't call him a judge in Hebrews either. But he in his own right there, he is, after Deborah finally twisted his arm and he was almost shamed into going out and doing it, it would seem. He's a man of faith, no question about that. We could ask the same thing about Samson, what's he doing there based on the life that he lived. But yet, in Samson's case, we don't know very much about his life. Maybe there was a lot commendable in that 18 years that aren't covered. It's a good question. I don't mean to say that Barak was not a faithful man. He did turn out to do his job. And the victory was pinned by a woman, as Deborah the prophetess had predicted that it would be, because, I think, of Barak's failure to decide to go forth in the way he should have at first. Did you have a further thought on that?
Right.
God didn't forget that any more than he forgot the faithfulness of Samson. Although Samson's life could have been a lot better if he obeyed God better. And I think the same would be true with Barak, if he had stood up and taken the leadership role that he should have at the beginning, instead of having to have his arm twisted by Deborah. Thank you for that. Any other questions or comments?